Welcome to The Psychology of Success. I'm Caden Terry, and each week I help young hustlers actualize their infinite potential by featuring interviews with world-class leaders in business, sports, and health. Now let's get into The Psychology of Success.
All right, welcome back to The Psychology of Success podcast. Today we have Robert Beatty, a.k.a. Cord, absolute stud. So we just met 3 days ago over text. Matt Blanchard connected us, and holy crap, I went through today and I read more about Cord and what he's got going on, and I am absolutely amazed. So a little bit of background on Cord. He's going to have to help me out with this because he has climbed Mount Everest twice. I think that's the biggest thing that has stood out to me so far. He's an author of 4 books, which we'll link and talk about today for sure. We'll link in the description. He's the founder of Zion Recovery and the founder of Zion Healing Center, which is he's franchising and currently has 60 units under contracts. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, 20 that are open and operational.
Yeah, awesome. And so we connected right away because I'm like, man, we're franchising Bin Blasters right now, and I need your help trying to figure out this franchising game. He's also the former CEO of Cherry Entertainment, which is listed on the NASDAQ. It's a publicly traded company, and he was the CEO. And he's a producer and director of quite a few different films. The one that stood out to me is Sherpa, right? About Everest, climbing Mount Everest. Yeah. Was that your journey when you actually went?
It was the film Sherpa is about the Sherpa people, the individuals that are responsible for the success of every climber in the Himalayas are the Sherpa people. And so the film, the documentary is really about them and their life and where they came from and how they do what they do and why the importance of what they do, and they don't get any credit for it. And so I really wanted to shine light on that without them, nobody's climbing any mountains in Nepal.
Yeah.
You know, without those guys.
Crazy. So you saw that story and you wanted to share it with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I spent a lot of time with a guy named Kami Rita Sherpa. He's become one of my best friends in life. And Kami is a guy who's now summited Everest 29 times. More times than anybody in the world. And he and I talk regularly. He lives in Kathmandu. He was just here. He was just over here visiting and then went back, but heck of a guy. But got to know the Sherpa people and decided to shine some light on it. They needed to have their own story. Yeah.
Man, so there's so much to dive into today. Holy cow. Like, I think let's start with your story, kind of where you grew up, what life was like in the beginning, and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I grew up in southern Utah. You know, I'm like most of us around here. Grew up in a Mormon family in New Harmony, Utah, just up the road from us. And had a military career for 13 years. When I got out of the service, I was really trying to find something to do. And latched on to some guys that were doing some film production and got in with them as a key grip, and then kind of as a gopher, you know, on the sets, and decided that it was something I was really passionate about as well, excited about it, and worked on a television show early on in my career called American Gladiators.
Okay.
Worked at Warner's. I worked for, I teamed up with a guy named Stan Lee. Stan and I teamed up for a long time on a few different projects, one in particular that we were partners in called Legion of Five. And Stan and I co-wrote that together.
Stan Lee?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I still own the property, at least half of it. His company, POW Entertainment, owns the other half, but I own half of that property. And
no way.
And he, you know, people like that, there were influencers on me, big mentors to me, on where I was trying to get to in my life. And, you know, my message to younger people that are in looking at entrepreneurial avenues of making money would be simply that, and what I wish I would have done because of my story is focused more of my attention on service industry business that would help other people. Because if you were helping other people, the money will chase you down. Like, you can't even run away from it. If everything you do is dedicated to somebody else's betterment in their life, making them better, you're going to make money. You can't run away from it. And so, but I had a lot of mental issues as a younger guy, some related to the military, some not. Depression was a big one. anxiety and depression, and then self-medication with drug use. And when I was about 40 years old, right in that area, I started to lose ground in my life, losing my business, my assets, my family, my wife, ending up homeless in Salt Lake for a couple of years, and losing my health, basically losing my life to substance abuse and mental health issues, and to the point where in 2010, I was told that I wouldn't live the day, and that my liver had completely failed, and that I had a heart attack and a heart failure because of that, and I was on my way out. And so if you read my book, The Desperation of a Dying Man, that's what it's about, is what does it take, you know, for somebody to find the elusive bottom of where we can go, and what becomes finally unacceptable to you that would make you change, right? And how do we recognize that? And then how do we take that pain and the suffering of that and turn that pain into power and embrace it and turn it into power that could actually take us out of that through a self and spiritual connection to a better life, and one that could be dedicated to helping other people, one that becomes successful helping other people. And I went through that journey. And when I fully recovered from my issues, it was because of the fire that I went through. And when I fully recovered, I made a decision that I wasn't going back to the film business because
bad environment.
It was my downfall. I mean, I was the worst person to be in that business. And even though I knew I could make money easily there, and I could make phone calls and be in $1 million a year salary overnight, I made a decision I was not going to do that. And I had about $275 on me and a one-way ticket for Nepal, and I went to Kathmandu, and I spent a year in Nepal trying to discover myself.
Crazy. Tell us about that.
And I hiked in the Himalayas and ran into people that have now become some really close friends of mine. Prayer, meditation, spent time in monasteries, spent time discovering myself. One of the things that we have as humans, we have a hard time with as humans, is being alone with us, right? Being alone in our own skin and being comfortable with that.
So true.
And not feeling lonely and not feeling despair when we are alone. And I got to tell you that learning how to do that, how to spend time with yourself and on yourself in that self-discovery, was probably one of the most healing things I had ever done. I absolutely loved it. And I loved being just with me.
You know? Yeah. What did that look like day to day when you're there in Nepal at these monasteries?
Just spending time in prayer, meditation, going through, doing an extensive amount of hiking. And the Himalayas, if you've never been there, you should go there, because we look at the mountains around here that are, 10,000, 11,000 feet in height, and when you're in the Khumbu Valley looking at Mount Everest and some of the surrounding peaks, and you realize that these mountains are 5 miles high in height, and it's just complete. So you're no longer looking at a mountain, you're staring, straight up at a mountain, and they're overwhelming, the reverence of them and the peace of them, you know. And so I wanted to spend as much time as I could there. I didn't want to leave, but I knew that I had a course correction here and I needed to go somewhere. And made a decision while I was there that I was going to go back to school. I was going to do something different. Went to pursue a master's degree in psychology and addiction at Purdue University in Illinois. I'm a 46-year-old man on the campus.
Yeah, that's a big jump. So let's walk through that. So you're a CEO of a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
Went to be homeless in Salt Lake.
Spent 18 months on the streets in Salt Lake.
Crazy.
And and lost my life to my drug addiction and alcoholism and my mental illness.
Uh-huh.
And survived it, you know, by the grace of God, go I, you know, you survive that. And then you make a decision that I'm going to, if I'm going to be here, then I'm going to do something that impacts other people by sharing that with them, right? So my idea in being in school was to become a therapist, and I had an undergraduate that I was pursuing in divinity. So I was going to become a therapist or a minister, one of the two.
Yeah, that's great.
And ended up doing both. Ended up pursuing both angles and joined the National Association of Christian Ministers and became a minister, and decided I was going to minister and preach to people. And there's not very much money in that to survive that.
A lot of fulfillment, though.
Oh, yeah. So fulfillment is amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. But I knew I had a bigger calling, and it was this story of mine was starting to develop in my mind into something that I felt like if I shared it with people, it would impact them, right? And how do you turn that into a business? So preachers don't make money. You know, they get a little tithing from their members, but they don't make money. And so being an entrepreneur and having an entrepreneurial spirit of my core, I knew that I was not going to sit with that very well for very long. And so I made a decision. I was going to open up a small treatment program, and I was going to learn the business of inpatient and outpatient treatment for mental health and substance abuse issues. And had a pretty good mentor that was before me. He was successful, kind of guiding me. And opened up my first center in Park City, Utah. And it was called New Year Recovery, and I opened up in partnership with a substance abuse counselor named Marcia Stafford, and she was wonderful. She knew the therapy side of the business. And together, we came together and formed this company and started our first inpatient program. And we miserably failed at it because of the moving parts of the business is so vast.
Yes.
There's so many moving
parts. I was thinking
that
in my head. It's like, how did he do that? I mean, you go to school to learn the principles, but not necessarily the business side of it. It's like a whole other puppy.
And there is no school for treatment. Like, you cannot learn the business of running a treatment program.
No.
There's no one to teach you.
Unless they go to your school, your franchise school, as we were talking about.
Zion University.
Yeah. Yes, that'll solve the problem.
And so... Yeah. We learned by fire how to write our manuals, our training manuals, and how to train people on this was basically what we were doing for ourselves, writing training manuals, policies and procedures, insurance manuals, credentialing manuals, and all of the things that we developed over the years. We sold that place, and I used the money from the sale of that to buy the retreat at Zion in Rockville down on Grafton Road, and I bought a 20-acre estate down there, a Spanish estate that's still there. And we had a 20-bed facility now, and we knew what we were doing at that point, and I made it very successful as an inpatient program. Still, you know, baptism by fire, still trying to learn, but I learned the business. And then we started an outpatient program. We started a detox called Zion Recovery. We started a detoxification program called Zion Detox. And I learned every aspect of this business. And one of the things that came to me, our outcomes were great, but they weren't perfect. And I wanted them to be, being a perfectionist. What came to me is that the inpatient treatment industry and the outpatient treatment industry treat people under what I call a matrix model. Which is kind of, I liken it, it is actually called the Matrix model, but I liken it to the movie The Matrix because it's like this unknown, whether it works or not, you know, and whether it's real or not. And the norm is for people to do group therapy and the outcomes are very poor, not financially. Financially, there's a lot of money in it. The outcome of success is not measured, in my mind, by the amount of money it generates, but by the success of the people going through it. And what I figured out in my research and in my own experience is that 90% of most people who go to treatment in our society fail at that level of care, meaning that they go back to the same behaviors that they went there for in the first place. So there had to be a better way. There had to be something else. And what we discovered was that technology would separate us from the matrix model. If we just we just deployed technology in our system through transcranial magnetic stimulation that's FDA approved and is proven to cure, treat, to effectively treat depression, anxiety, OCD, ADD, PTSD, bipolar depression, all of those things effectively using an MRI strength magnetic pulse to hit an area of the brain called the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex, I could effectively wake up that side, that part of their brain, and force it to work out like physical therapy, mm-hmm. which sitting in a treatment center wasn't going to happen.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
And our income, or our increase in patient outcomes went through the roof. Like,
really?
It was patient outcomes were no longer failure rates; they were success rates, and we were judging the success rate based on the fact that nobody was coming back around. So. Mm-hmm. Our people were staying out, staying well. And we just kept developing that. We introduced neurofeedback technology into what we were doing. There's a company called NeuroStar that builds the number one TMS system in the world. They're the largest company there is. And their machine has an 85% success rate in long-term remission from depression, anxiety, OCD, ADD, PTSD. And proven over, 5 years of study, and has a huge success rate to it. And they only sell to doctors. And I got on the phone, and I called and called until I got the CEO of that company on the phone with me, Keith Sullivan. And I said, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. I used your equipment. He said, yeah, I know who you are. And I said, I'm going to franchise this model. And he said, and I need your support. And he said, over your dead body. Over my dead body.
Oh, no way.
We're not selling our equipment to entrepreneurs.
What?
And they don't. They have to. It's FDA approved, so it has to be overseen and controlled by a doctor.
Yeah.
And I told, well, hang on. Here's what we're gonna do. Every franchise center is going to have a medical director who's responsible for that equipment, who oversees that equipment and its care and the care of the patients. It's all going to be done in a clinical setting, and he said, I like it. So away we went. We built the franchise model, and a year later, with the franchise model working exactly like we wanted it to, I signed a 10-year exclusive contract with NeuroStar. We are the only franchise of that technology.
Oh, man, dude. Good for you.
Yeah. And they embraced us. We embraced them and their technology, and away we went. And started franchising.
Okay, so how did you even get the idea in the first place to franchise? Did you go into this business with that idea, like, okay, I want to perfect it and then franchise it? Or what steps did you take? Because I know there's a lot of young hustlers that are like, man, I have a cool idea. How do I franchise it? What did that look like?
You have to, and believe me, I'm still refining my franchise. I mean, you're going to go through the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because nobody's teaching the franchise business either. Right.
I'm trying to figure it out.
From the training side, yes, but nobody's teaching the franchisor exactly how to do this.
No.
What I did was I being a veteran, I looked for other veterans that I could lean on as mentors who would be potentially in the industry of franchising. And I found one, and his name is Jim Amos. Jim is a Marine Corps, fellow Marine, fellow veteran, hardcore Vietnam vet, Purple Heart guy, who also founded UPS stores.
What?
Yeah. So I called Jim and said, this is what I need you to do.
That's called a mentor.
I need you to sit on my board, and I need you to teach me this business and tell me what I'm doing wrong, what I'm doing right, and help me shape this. And so I think the answer to your question, and to the one, your fan base that's listening to your show, is that don't ever think First of all, a quote that Stan Lee gave me that I really love was, if you ever have a good idea, don't ever let anybody talk you out of that idea, ever. If it's a good idea, pursue the idea. Don't let anybody talk you out of it just because they don't like it or they say it won't work. Doesn't matter. If you think it's a good idea, then run with it.
And just so we're clear, is that like Stan Lee from Marvel?
Yeah. Stan and I were partners in a couple of different projects, and when he was alive, he was a great guy. But I would listen to things he said, and I really
take notes, man. It's like, holy cow.
And one of the things he said was, you know, if you ever think it's a good idea, don't ever let anybody talk you out of it, because it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Right. And so all you got to do at that point is, how do I apply something to the good idea that actually makes it work? You find mentors. Like, you find other people that are either in the same situation you're in and you share and you collaborate together, or you find people that have been before you, ahead of you, have already gone through all the heartache that you're about to go through, and they're willing to teach you. And what I found about entrepreneurship and the business world is that we tend to think that the people that are successful out there in business are not touchable. Like, there's no access to them. It's actually just the opposite. People that are successful in business would love to teach anybody what they're doing, because that's how they give back. That's how they show, that's how they prop themselves up and feel better about what they're doing, right? So Jim Amos was one. Bedros Koulian, you know, he put together the Fit Body Boot Camp franchise. I think they have about 2,000 locations nationwide.
There's one here now,
and,
I think.
And leaned on Bedros. He sold out of that. Crazy. He did an exit on that was, I don't know how many hundreds of millions. It was a big exit.
That's the good.
Now he's just doing motivational speaking, and you lean on people like that, you know, that you can listen to and ask questions of, and then you can learn any business, you know.
Wow. So it sounds like throughout your life, you just surround yourself with the right people, right? And it's especially business-wise, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's not surrounding yourself with them, but being fearless about calling and talking to people and saying, I need your help. There's nothing wrong with saying to somebody who's really successful, I need your help. And when somebody says, I don't have time for you, so that's okay. I'll find somebody else that does.
Yeah. So what?
It's all right. You know, just not give up. Just go find somebody else that does, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Go talk to them, you know, because they'll teach you.
So as I've heard your story, I kind of want to dive into, so you're the CEO of a publicly traded company, right?
Yeah, it's no longer. Yeah.
No longer.
Yeah.
Okay. They were.
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, walk us through that process of going from that to being homeless in Salt Lake, and what kind of, how did your perspective change throughout that whole process?
Well, the public markets for us, when we took our company public and 1990, I think it was 91 we finally went public, but the you know, at that time we had the availability of money was accessible to us. You know, our company was revenuing a lot of money, about $90 million a year, and when you're young, you know, in your 30s, and you're generating that type of wealth, you tend to think you're invincible. Becoming a public company only for us was just an end to a means. It was a way to get more, to access bigger markets. We were in a public market time when guys like, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street that you watched the movie about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was running with all of those guys and raising money at my whim. So if I needed money to do something or build something, I could get it easily. I could just ask for it. And you would issue more shares for it. You would have a couple of lawyers involved, and $20 million would show up so you could do something else. And then we built a company that expanded, you know, went from the the work on the live performances of American Gladiators to acquisition of the Lippens Honor Stallions, to acquisition of the World Wrestling Federation of Canada, acquisition of Chippendale International, and you just keep building and building and building. And when you're young and you're doing things like that, to introduce to that the other side of the underbelly of that beast, which is drugs, alcohol, when all the dumb things that people do when they're in their 30s, and for me, not understanding that I have addiction running and coursing through my genetic genes, and have that take over my life and control what I was doing and control the management of my life, that is the downfall, right? And so our company suffered financially and because of my mistakes and the huge mistakes that we made, to a point where our company was out of business. We had lawsuits with the SEC. We had investigation and SEC involvement and a lot of press, and our company went down like a 747 coming out of the sky on a ball of flames. Right. What you learn from that is what not to do. Right. So there's no school, no professional school out there. No, there's no Harvard. There's no Purdue. There's no Dixie College. There's no school that's going to teach you what to do, everything that you need to know of what to do to be a successful entrepreneur. You're going to learn by making mistakes, by listening to other people, making mistakes, surviving the mistake, moving forward, right? Which is what I had to do. Yeah. And simple as that.
Yeah.
You know? But you also have to have the stomach for it. Like, you've got to be willing to stick with it no matter what. And for a period of my life, I was unwilling to do that. But, you know, coming out of the downfall, what I learned about my downfall was that I was in the wrong business. I was in the wrong business for who I am. And it's okay to change and change course and do a different business, something that works for me. So if one thing's not working, it's okay for me to change course and do something else. And I learned for me that I just needed to be in a business of helping people, and a business that actually makes really good money helping other people. And then I would be successful. And so that's what I did. Yep. If that answers your question.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's incredible that you've been able to find what you're passionate about and also find a way to make money doing it by serving people, right? Because like you're saying, I think it's interesting that if you find a business that serves people and makes them better, the money is going to chase you.
Yeah.
I guess it's just kind of like, you're not going to be able to run from it.
Yeah. Yeah, find something that people need that is serving other people. It's a niche. I mean, your business, look at that. And until I found your business, I would have never thought about hiring somebody to do that.
Yeah.
But when I saw it, I went, that is a cool business. I'm going to hire these guys because that's something I don't like doing.
Yeah.
And they do it. They have a system that does that for me.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah, it's crazy. I just found out off air that we clean Cord's garbage cans every 3 months. And I was like, oh, awesome. So yeah, we solved that problem. I'm serving people.
Yeah, serving people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're serving people. You're giving them something that they need, and you're making their life easier. They benefit from it. And you're going to make a lot of money because of that. I can see that.
Hopefully, yeah.
When I saw it, I went, wow, what a great franchise. Like, this is what a solid franchise that somebody has done this. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's exciting because we are the biggest bin cleaning franchise in the nation. I haven't seen anyone else that's doing it. So that's why when I got the opportunity, I've just been dropping everything else I've been doing because I see that there's so much potential with it. Yeah. So just like you've done with your franchise, you built the whole, you said it's Zion University. What do you call it?
It's called Zion University. Yeah.
Okay.
We have our franchise, but then a part of that franchise they pay for is an actual university that is, it's online. It's extensive. We have our own, because of my production history, we developed all of our own training videos, you know, they're all produced, professionally produced. We have a, On our treatment side, we have a full suite of education on psychoeducation, mental health, overcoming substance abuse, a whole course on it that is online on an LMS learning management system. It's called 15 Promises to Freedom. And it's just a step-by-step from misery to freedom. And you just follow the course. And we did the same thing with our franchise where we developed a video course of training. And so Zion University has a lot to it. You know, there's two, every 6 months, there is an on-site university course that we do in different parts of the country to make it easier for our franchisees to get to. We just did, last month, we just did our six-month course in San Diego. That's Matt. I had Matt come down, and he was a guest speaker. And
so cool.
We had about 50 of our guys there, and we did a training for 5 days. And then the next 6 months will be in February. So the university takes in that, and then it takes on an internship. So any franchisee that we have who signs on with us, it's mandatory that they come to the Zion University course, but it's also mandatory that they intern with us. It's a two-week internship in our operating clinic. So they put scrubs on, they come to work just like they're a counselor, a therapist, a technician, but they are there to act as if they are running their own business. And then we teach them hands-on how to do this. So that when they go home and they start, they don't fail.
So with all these courses, I mean, you've had a vast experience with helping people that have mental health problems that they're working through. So what, for all the young hustlers out there, what are some common or some healthy ways that we can cope with these emotions that we feel instead of coping in a negative way?
Climb, man. Get into climbing.
Yeah, go climb Everest a couple times.
You want to get into some freedom. Go take up climbing.
Yeah,
you know, canyoneering, rappelling, climbing. You know, that's what, favorite. I mean, I joke about it, but I'm serious. I mean, make sure you're. You know, there's four elements to success in this world, and it's not money. Money is not one of them. That's just a byproduct of what you are. But the elements of success in my experience, in my history, is mental, it's physical, it's spiritual, it's emotional. All four of those things need to be in check, or I'm failing at what I'm doing, right? If I turn away from those four elements and I turn into selfishness and greed and more me, I'm most likely going to fail at what I'm doing at some point, because I'm making it all about the money and all about me, and I don't care what about anybody else. You know, there's a very, very, very small minority in our society of people that have actually become successful based on that theory. On the other side of the fence, there is a gigantic amount of people that are hugely, hugely successful because they give back and they teach others and they help others and they do everything that they can do to help their fellow man. And they're hugely successful because of it. But Elon Musk, I mean, everything the man does is to better our life, right? Everything.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't have any greed in him. He's doing things that better our society, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
And look how successful he is. So, you know, keep the selfishness out of it. You know, don't get too money hungry. It'll hunt you down if you're doing the right thing. And if you're helping other people and you're focused on that. You know, if you're a franchisor of a business, put 100% of your effort on making life easy for your franchisee. Watch the money roll, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm in the process of doing right now.
Yeah,
it's kind of daunting. I feel like it's like such a big responsibility because these people are trusting us with their money and with their time, and it's our responsibility to create a successful environment for them to thrive in business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I go through the same thing. You know, I have people buy a franchise from us, and they, you know, because you buy a franchise, as you know, people tend to believe that since I've bought a franchise, everything is supposed to be done for me.
No.
It's not.
Yeah.
Our job as a franchisor is to make our system better every single day. Their job is to implement using our system.
Yes.
To show up at work, to do the work, to stand on a street corner with a sign, with a, like a pizza sign going, free this, free that, please come here. That's their job.
Uh-huh. Right?
It's not our job.
Yeah. We give them the playbook. They got to actually run the route.
Yeah. You got to run the business.
Yeah.
And they forget that, you know, so you have to constantly remind them, come back to this, you know, this is your business. You need to run your business. It's not my business. It's your business. You know? So I've gone through the same growing spurts in my own company, you know, with understanding who should be a franchisee, who shouldn't, and become pretty comfortable turning people away from granting them one of my franchises, you know.
How do you, because I'm at that point too, so I'm on calls every day with people all around the nation that are interested in Bin Blasters. And it's my job to kind of vet them to see if they'd be a good fit. But it's so tempting because if they have the money and they have the time, like I want to reward them a franchise.
Right. You look at the franchise fee and you go, well, our company really needs that, so we should do this. But it's a mistake for us as franchisors to do that, because unless they have the mental fortitude to become successful, driven, experience in business, if they don't have experience in business, so eager to learn that they would do anything that you tell them to do, how you tell them to do it. It's our job is to actually vet those people and do the right thing and turn them down if they're not those people. You know, financial wherewithal to survive an entire year with no income, nothing but a straight financial burn, every straight day, you know, another burn, more advertising, more money out the door, and survive an entire year without any income, you know. If that's the guy and they're willing to do that, well, let's talk about that, you know, because that's what you're going to have to do, you know.
Isn't it, kid? That's an interesting thing that I want to point out. Surviving a year without income. Like, I just talked about this on my last episode. I used to have such the mindset, and I think a lot of the young hustlers do as well, that we get into business and we're going to immediately start making a ton of money. Yeah, I know you laugh, Gordon, because it's like, you with me and our franchises, it's like, you got to understand that it takes time. Like,
it
you
got
to work. You can't expect to make money right away.
Yeah.
It could be years.
Yeah.
But you have the vision of what it could be.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jim told me one day, you buy a UPS franchise, a UPS store franchise, you're going to burn $1.5 million before you see a penny.
What?
Yeah.
That's after paying the franchise fee and all the other stuff. That's just putting it more into the business.
Yeah, building out your shop, building that center out, all the infrastructure of that. And, you know, you have to be willing to do that. There's other franchises that you can start cheaper, but you have to be willing to do what it takes to get there, right? There's no such thing as an absentee franchisee. That can't exist.
What do you mean, like completely hands off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll buy the franchise, and I don't want to do anything. I just want it to do it on its own.
No.
So I'm going to hire this kid, and he's got an NBA, and he went to this college, and so because he's got an NBA, I'm gonna turn him loose on this business. A guy with an NBA he doesn't know crap. All he's going to tell me, but with that piece of paper, is that he showed up to class every day just long enough to tell me that he actually might be somebody that I could groom into somebody running my business, how I want it ran, and he's not going to screw my company up when I turn it over to him, you know? But I'm certainly not going to put him in that place when he has no experience in it and just turn him loose. You know, I need to do that myself. If I'm going to get in the fire and learn by fire, I need to do that myself, and then I can hand that over to him, right? So, yeah, we tell our guys that you need a year. You need a year to profitability, you know. Dig in, because you're going to be in a foxhole for the next year.
Man, I totally agree with you. And it's, for me, it's reassuring hearing that from another franchisor like yourself.
Yeah.
That it takes time and you set that expectation with your franchisees.
Yeah.
Right. So once again, for the listeners that are learning, a franchisor is someone that is offering a franchise. So for example, at Bin Blasters, I'm an owner at Bin Blasters Franchising. So I'm a franchisor. and say Cord, or actually one of the listeners, Alex Mashburn and Caden Peterson, they just bought a Bin Blasters franchise. And so they're the franchisee, because as the franchisor, me, I sold them a franchise, right, within our ecosystem.
Yeah.
And so it's so reassuring hearing that from another franchisor that you can expect to
dig in. Because here you've got a guy that knows the business. He now is your mentor that you need to look up to. He's the only person you should look up to at that point, because you've invested your hard-earned money. They shouldn't be out hiring other outside consultants and doing things that are away from you. They should be looking to you for every single move that they make. And looking up to you as more of a mentor than as a franchisor. Because unless they're successful, that 6% royalty or whatever you guys are charging,
it's the same.
It doesn't mean anything. Unless they're successful, you can't make any money. And so you're the guy who's going, please do things the way that I tell you to do it so that we can make money together. Because every time you step out and do something away from me, it costs us time and it costs us money.
Yes.
Do it this way, you know, listen to it, read the manuals, do things the way it's set up. Let me teach you and do it our way, because we've already been through all that stuff that you're going through. We already did all that.
Yeah, made the mistakes, lost money.
So why are you out there doing that? You know, when I'm telling you, here, I have the answer. I can't tell you how many franchisees I have worked with over the last 3 years who, no matter what I've said, wanted to do things their way.
Why are they a franchisee then?
Yeah, and I just had to step back and go, well, why don't you give me a call when you've had too much suffering, you know? Then we'll do things the right way. Because I've already done all that. I've already been through all that. And I have a solid solution. It's my way. Because I've already been through all that. And they come back around and say, well, we're about to close our doors. We're going under. Oh, great. So now we can begin, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then let's fix this.
See, the franchisee system, it's interesting, because with the FTD, it shows... What if you have franchises that have gone out of business, right?
Yeah.
And so it holds us accountable as a franchisor that, okay, man, we want to help you, but it's hard when they fall like that. It's like, man, if you would have just listened to what the whole layout, our game plan, we could have helped you.
Could have helped you. Yeah. Don't, you know, for the franchisee that's out there that's listening, don't let it get that far. Like, if you're struggling, go to your franchisor and say, I'm struggling. I'm doing something wrong. Teach me. What am I doing wrong? Because then the franchisor, they're your partner. They can get involved. Like, you get in. Like, if somebody came to you and said, I'm struggling, I feel like I'm going to go under, you're not just going to say, too bad.
Because it hurts me.
It's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
You're going to say, let me fly out and sit with you, and let's figure out what's going on. We'll come out and I'll work the streets with you, or I'll do whatever.
Yeah, clean
come
the
sit
bands.
In the truck. I'll clean the bins. I'll do this. Let me help you with the advertising, how you've got that set up. Let me help you out with the promotion, and let me turnkey the system with you to get it down so it's really working for you. You're not just going to sit back and say, oh, you know, too bad. I'm the franchisor, man. That would hurt me, you know, so I'm not going to let that happen. You know, we've gone through the same struggles, you know, and then ended up, you know, looking at a couple of franchisees that were going to go out of business that we had to step in and really help, you know, because of that. And we should. It's on us to do that.
Yeah. That's a lot to handle. Man, it gets me excited and almost kind of scared. You know, as Bin Blasters grows.
Yeah.
Because it holds the franchisor accountable. Because if they go down, you go down with them in a way.
That's right.
It shows on your reputation. If you try and sell super future franchises, and they call up that franchise and said, hey, like, why'd you guys fell? And they're talking bad on your company. Well, you know, Caden didn't come help me when I couldn't figure out how to clean these cans. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to sell more franchises.
Yeah, and, you know, they're not going to tell the truth that I didn't follow his system. I just went under.
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't do this and he didn't do that. That's when it's not the case. You did everything you could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Termination, you know, termination of a franchisee, I think, is very detrimental to a franchisor. And we have a responsibility to fight for every one of them. You know, I certainly do with my guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I get in the trench, man. I'm like, dude, like, I am here. I'm on the phone. Let's go. You know, what do I need to do to help you churn this?
Yeah.
Do I need to come and sit in your franchise for the next 6 months? I'll do it if that's what you need me to do, you know, because that's what I will do, you know, rather than see them struggle and go under. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's that commitment to your people.
Commitment, yeah.
It's amazing.
I don't want them to get hurt. I want them to succeed because I can't make my 6% without them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Franchise fee goes that far. It's a very small piece.
Yeah, it's just like a little push.
Poof, gone, man. You're. It's all people think. Oh, he's got a big franchise fee. He's making all this money. No, he's not. It's not all going out in the window. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's amazing. So, I want to dive more into climbing Mount Everest. This is crazy. So you've done it twice. Is that right?
Well, Everest, but there's the peaks of Everest all on the other side, on the south side. Island Peak, and there's several different peaks of Everest. And so it's not that I summited Everest twice. Uh-huh. It's that I climbed the other peaks that are around it. And so I've done a total of 8 of the big peaks in Nepal as well. And the climbs are difficult, something I'm passionate about. I like doing it. It's something I want to continue to do. And, you know, I've got my sights set on Alma de Blom. If you've never looked at it, it's big and scary. And, but there's a lot of climbers in the world that summit Mount Everest that, you know, it's kind of a shoulder shrug. It's whatever, they did it at Everest. But in the climbing world, when you do peaks like K2, Alma de Blom, it's kind of like, oh, he's...
He's one of those guys.
So is that your goal, to be able to sell one of those?
Yeah. So I've got my sights set on summiting Dengbuche. There's a peak called Dengbuche. We're gonna do that one above that, and then Alma de Blom.
So what motivates you to do these crazy climbs?
There's a real inner peace about it. There's a lot of suffering that goes into it, but then there's a real inner peace of being out there on your own, you know, one foot in front of the other, one step at a time, one step, one breath, being in a place where animals don't even live, and, you know, there's nothing but you and a mountain. There's nothing to compete with. It's just you, whether you're going to give up or you're going to make it, you know. I remember summiting a peak called Island Peak, and it was one of the hardest climbs I had ever done, because we left at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was exactly 24 hours when I got back down to base camp, and the climb was 17,000 to 24, straight up, straight back down from the base camp from where we were at. So it was a big climb in a day at a lot of altitude, and then back down, and I remember coming down off of that in a euphoria, thinking, I can't believe I just pulled that off. And yet being so exhausted, you know, that by the time I got back to the tent at base camp, I just collapsed for like 14 straight hours, you know. But I think there's some real inner peace and personal satisfaction by setting your goals on something big that seems unattainable, you know. And the business of recovery, I've always felt like anything is possible. If you're clean and sober and mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally fit, you can do anything. You can do anything you want. And so I set goals like that so that I can show other people around me. It's not an ego thing. It's really to show somebody else who's suffering, mm-hmm, in those areas, that anything's possible. All you got to do is get yourself down the middle lane, and then set your goals on, you know, set your sights on that goal and go for it.
Mm.
You know,
it's powerful. So in a way, it's to inspire other people.
Sure. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally to inspire them.
Yeah.
That anything goes. Same reason I write books. You know, I write books to inspire other people that these things that I go through, anybody could go through them, but what are we doing with it? Does it help you, you know, listening to this roadmap and these stories? Yeah. That's why you're doing your podcast, you know, to hire other people, you know, mm-hmm, I commend you for doing that.
Yeah, appreciate it. So with your books, how can we order them? How can we get them?
You can go to the website, zionhealing.com, and order the books over there. Barnes & Noble, How Free Do You Want to Be? This book is Desperation of a Dying Man. And this is the... this one has got some that one's got some personal stories in it that are pretty impactful, I think, life-changing and impactful for people to read.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really that book in particular is it took me 3 years to write, and it's really a journey to find something, and the something I'm trying to find that I outline in that book is this elusive thing that we call the bottom, or what we really consider powerlessness, right? And then how do I harness powerlessness? Like, if I don't have the power to change my environment or myself, but how do I harness that and embrace that instead of just wallowing in it or running away from it or dying from it, and then turning that into power, you know, turning my pain and the suffering that I have into power and empowerment.
Mm.
And that's what that book is about.
Dude, that fires me up, because that's the theme of the podcast. Like, for example, with my heart surgeries, like I've talked about,
yeah,
I learned the lesson that any obstacle that we have can be turned into an opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? We can use it as fuel for our growth. It's like just fuel to a fire.
Yeah.
And you just grow and grow and
just grow. Just grow and grow and grow. Yeah.
Does it stop?
And this one is more of a spiritual, this is more of a spiritual book. It's a spiritual roadmap on identifying, you know, who I really am, and looking at higher power, whatever I call that, and learning how to pray, meditate, all the stuff that, you know, goes into that.
Yeah.
But I can give you that book. Yeah. That's a powerful read.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to read it.
Yeah.
And for the hustlers out there, you'll see me post about it. I'll make a little video talking about it and tag it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I dig into some pretty personal stuff there. It's pretty deep. You know, I studied the Tao Te Ching. It's a big part of that book. Learning how to go through life. You know, I don't know if you ever studied the Tao, but in the study of the Tao, which I learned in Nepal, the Tao Te Ching teaches a principle, and the principle is that the easiest path is always where the water flows. And so rather than being rigid about something that I'm doing, I need to learn that I need to go like this with it and go that route. That's the easiest path to get there. Generally, by listening and talking with other people, it gives me that easier path to it, mm-hmm. right? And so mentorship, listening to other people, talking with other people, sharing stories. You know, I get as much from people that are younger than me, like you, as I do from people that are older than me. You know, I just take it all in, listen to everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
That's great.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up here, we'll check out your books. But how can my listeners serve and support you? What you got going?
Well, you can, if you're entrepreneurial and you decide that that Zion Healing might be something that you're excited about, you want to be in the behavioral health space, so you can certainly go to our website and check us out and fill out an inquiry form for a franchise, you know, and absolutely. And we'll talk to them about it and see if they're a right fit. You know, you know, we have a goal. Ours is not a tremendous goal, but our goal is to build about 500 Zion Healing Centers in the U.S. I'm a veteran. We have a second initiative that we have raised a substantial amount of money for. We're building a 50-bed inpatient treatment center here in St. George, where the new hospital is going.
No way.
Out on the Washington exit. That inpatient program is going to be for veterans only, because we're a government contractor, so we fill GSA contracts for TRICARE and VA for veterans that need help, and so we're heavily involved in that whole veterans initiative. But yeah, if you're listening, you like our company, check us out, give us a call, and we'll talk. You know,
great.
Yeah,
yeah. Reach out. So last question here. And once again, I appreciate your time. It's been so much fun. I feel like we could spend another hour or two. But to kind of wrap it up, I want you to imagine, Cordon, that you can prescribe anything to the entire world, and they have to do it for 30 days. What do you tell them to do?
For 30 days?
Uh-huh. They have to do it, the entire world.
I think if I could prescribe that, you know. Now, is this somebody, the person that you're talking about is somebody that's in business for themselves or wants to be?
Yeah, right? Could be. Yeah, for sure.
Choose the path that you're going to go, right? Whatever that is. Don't make an impulsive decision to just go back to school because that's what your path is going to be. But choose the path and then put that in front of you. Meditate on it. Meditate on that, right? The word meditation, if you look it up, it means to listen. So if I'm going to put something out to the universe, to my creator, my higher power, whatever that is, about my direction, and I'm unwilling to listen, I'm probably not going to get any advice. Prayer without meditation is like asking for something that you really don't want to have happen.
Yeah.
Because nothing's going to happen. So meditate on things like that, and then choose your path on where you're going to go, and then spend 30 straight days researching that path to know every single thing there is to know about it. Don't just impulsively jump in a direction. Because we spend, you know, I'm 60 years old, and I can tell you for a fact that the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life, the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life is because I was jumping and grabbing for everything, going down one path and then quickly shifting and going in another path, thinking, oh, you know, like a dog after a bone, oh, I'll go over here, and then I'll do this, and then I'll do that. You know, set your sights. If it's your franchise, I'm going to set my sights on having a franchise from you, and I'm going to learn everything about that franchise for 30 straight days before I move forward. Do my due diligence. Look at it. Learn about it. Come and meet with you and spend time with you understanding your business before I go forward. Do that.